Okay, we're learning Malachim Aleph. We are in the second parak. This is the second week. We are up to Pasuk Zion. No problem. We're learning the beginning of this parak, which, as you can see, is also the Haftorah for Parshas Vayechi, which we'll be reading in just a week or two. This is the last moments of David's life. And David chooses to use his last moments to speak to his son, to Shlomo, who is his successor, and gives him certain advice, certain things in which he should do. And the first things that he begins discussing was the importance of making sure to be steadfast in his mitzvah observance, Torah observance. And then he starts going off, telling him all different people that deserve to be punished. The first person, the only one we actually saw so far, was Yoab. Yoab ben Tsruya is for a couple of things that he had done, which were harmful, killing some innocent people, Avner and Amasa, as it says in Pasuk Hey. And not only that, but as we saw in Rashi, the way that he went about doing such a thing was in such a sly manner that he was giving them the impression that he was asking halakhic questions. If you remember, Rashi told us the story about when it came to Avner, he asked him a halakhic question. If you have a woman who doesn't have any hands, Rachman al-Tzlan, and her husband passed away, childless, and chalitza needs to be performed, how does she go about doing chalitza? So he bent down to show exactly how to remove the shoe, and that was the time that he struck him down. So Yoav was someone that David felt deserved to be killed. David didn't want to kill him because of his tremendous power, but he was hoping that his son would continue in such a way. He concluded that Yoav ben Tsruya, he shouldn't just die in his deathbed, but as it says in the end of Pasuk Vav, that v'osoyri tzivasi b'shom sh'ol, he should not die a peaceful death, but rather he should die a violent death, a death by the sword. And although it seems to be uncharacteristic of David, you should be compassionate, the last moments of your life, to not show compassion. So in this Rashi, as we saw, we'll see this again, we'll then continue. Rashi says, "V'osarit sivasi b'sholom sh'ol," which is about 5 lines from the bottom of the Pasuk above, says, "Al tenichuhu l'mos misas atzma." I don't want him just to die a natural death by himself. V'lipo b'gehenim. Because he has done so many crimes, committed so many sins in his lifetime, that he deserves that his punishment in the world to come, he will not merit to go to Gan Eden, go to Gehenna. And therefore, by giving him a brutal death, Misa being a kapara, is an atonement for the iniquities that one has committed in their lifetime. So this way, Yoab and Struya will merit a portion of the world to come. So even though on the surface it seemed like David was doing this because he was angry, he did it because he was brutal, nonetheless he really had Yoab ben Tsruya's best intentions in mind. Why should he die a painless death? If he dies a more painful death, it will certainly benefit in the world to come. That's what Rashi says, and that's how we left off.
Yoab was his army guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was a very powerful person. On one level, he was very loyal, but on another level, he did a lot of things on his own. He didn't always get the king's permission. He just acted on his own. And because of that, the problem was that Yoav was so powerful that Shlomo, who right now is just a 12-year-old kid, can only imagine that the power that Yoav and Suri would be able to have over Shlomo, ultimately threatening the throne of David's successor, David's son. And possibly part of the reason why David is giving him all this advice, Shlomo, who represents peace, he's not someone who's a violent man, he's going to follow whatever his father tells him to do because David has his son's best interests at heart, in mind. And therefore, in order to remove certain threats, will pave the way for a long, peaceful Malchus, peaceful reign.
How is Shlomo, a 12-year-old, supposed to kill such a powerful person? I mean, I would think that David is at the reign.
Maybe he doesn't do it right away. Maybe he doesn't do it when he's 12.
I would have thought that David would have done it. king.
I also think that, I understand that he needed it for the peace of the country,
right,
for his safety, but it seems to be a very harsh thing for a father to tell, a king and a father to tell a child, right, even a young man,
right,
start out by killing people. I would, right, think on your deathbed you would have more important things to tell.
Exactly. Them. You're absolutely right. And he doesn't stop there. We're going to see after a couple of psukim, as we'll see them shortly, of how he actually shows hakaras hatov, he shows appreciation for the people that did good things for him. Mm-hmm. But we are going to see other people that he feels deserves to be killed in different ways around. But the concept, the way that's just explained, is that without David giving Shlomo these instructions, as violent as it sounds, people would walk all over him, and ultimately he would end up being killed himself, and Malchus based David will cease to exist. So that's the reason why. And David, as we know, lost a lot of power. People didn't respect him, which caused, toward the end of his life, this rebellion against him again with his other son, with Adoniyahu. So a lot of people didn't necessarily listen to what David had to say as much as they used to. So they needed a new person, a new leader. And once they have this new leader, all of a sudden people think, you know, you have a new president and he keeps preaching change and all these wonderful things. So everyone starts thinking that things are going to be better. So we'll just do whatever this person says. So let's do whatever this 12-year-old says. So that's what David had in mind. So now let's continue. And Pasuk Zayin, V'livnei Barzilai HaGiladi. As far as Barzilai from Gilad, Ta'asa Chesed. I'm not a complete butcher, heartless person. You should do kindness for him and for his descendants. V'hoi bo'ayuchli shulchanecha. You should be someone that you should eat at your table. You should constantly make sure that they have all the food and drink necessary for their survival. Let them enjoy their lives. Why? What did they do? King Karbo Eli, the Brachim in the Avshalom Achicha.
I'm sorry, the Hayu, the Ochle Shulchanecha.
They should eat at his table.
At your table.
Right. This is David speaking to Shlomo.
Shlomo. Mm-hmm. That this Barzilai and his family should eat at his table?
At your table, Shlomo. Right.
I think it means more than they should be well fed. I think it means
and who is this
Barzilai? Oh, so let's see the rest of this pasuk. What did he do? He came Karvo Eli, he came close to me, he helped me out. When I was running away from your brother, Avshalom. He doesn't call Avshalom his son. He says, Avshalom, your brother. But the reason for that is because he's trying to show Shlomo how his connection, Shlomo's connection, not my connection, not David's connection. So when I was in a vulnerable state and I was running around and I didn't have probably a whole lot to eat, to survive on, he was there to help me out. And therefore, as you can see in, for example, in the English over here, in 7, it says, Barzilai the Giladi had shown great loyalty, page 19, and generosity to David, by supplying him with food and provisions when he was forlorn and almost friendless. And David had expressed lavish gratitude by making Barzilai's son a permanent guest at the royal table. Right? So it's not just making sure he has food. Now David asks Shlomo to continue his generous expression of gratitude. So this is, again, another message that David is teaching his son. Not just take care of this one guy by the name of Barzilai, but if someone does you a favor, if someone does something good for you, then you have to repay them. And when it comes to being a king, if you're going to be a successful king, and there are people that are loyal to you, then you have to reward them. You have to show them that you're appreciative of their loyalty. And by showing appreciation, it doesn't only help that person, but everyone else around you. They realize that doing good or being loyal to the king makes a difference. If a person sees that you do favors for our king and nothing comes back to you, so why should I do a favor to the king? Why care? So the fact, by publicizing that you, not only you, the favors that were done to you, but even the things that were done to your father, that you're going to be loyal to. That shows there's a tremendous amount of support you'll probably have. I believe all these things that he's saying are different life lessons, how to be an effective leader and how to be an effective king. So that's what he was told.
I think the paragraph above in English,
yeah,
above the Barzillai line.
Okay, go ahead.
That one sort of calms me down about this advice, because
right.
It says Abarbanel, he didn't really tell him to kill him, to be careful of him because of his history of insubordination. Don't allow him to become powerful as
right.
He had been undeserved. Do not allow his white hair to go down to the grave in peace. He mentioned he should keep his distance from Yoav and not allow a friendly relationship to Yoav, because Yoav would probably do that.
Right.
Try to ingratiate himself until
right.
Yoav went to the grave. Perhaps Solomon was to drive him into exile and prevent him from living out his years in peace, but not necessarily to kill him.
Right.
And that you would say he deserved, and that you could tell a child more easily.
Right.
You know, just to keep away from him. And we all tell children that too. If somebody is bothering them, we say just keep away.
Keep away from him. Right. Right. So that's
that makes
it's a softer
yeah,
way of reading the
yeah,
sentence.
Right.
Absolutely. It's a little more palatable. It's brought down, so that was folk going back to our pasuk of Barzillai. There's an interesting medrash that actually points out that throughout all of the Tanakh, we find Barzillai's name is mentioned five times. Five times he's called Barzillai Hagiladi. And the Medrash tells us why five. It says, Lefi Shapirnes Barzillai is David, Vivrachol Eretz Gilad, Vibnei Avshalom. The reason why it mentions Gilad, why does it keep mentioning where he's from, is because when David was running away from his son, and he was in Gilad, he was given food and drink. So why does it say it five times throughout all the scripture? Keneged Chemisha Chumshi Torah. This is what the Medrash says. It's opposite the five books of the Torah. L'madecha, to teach you, shekol mi shehu machel prusa l'tzadik, anyone who feeds a tzadik, someone who is in need, ki'ilu kim chamisha sifri Torah. That's comparable to learning and upholding all the Torah. By taking care of the tzadik who keeps the Torah, that without you helping them, they wouldn't be able to learn, then it's considered as you're also part of that process. And some people, not necessarily quoting this Medrash, but if you have someone, for example, who is in Kohel, or people that are in need of support, and without your assistance, they wouldn't be able to learn Torah. So by you giving them money, you're actually part of that. It's as though you're actually, Mimikayim, you're fulfilling the Torah, because without you, they wouldn't be able to learn the Torah. So this was the greatness of Barzillai. That it's not just, we learn out from him, anyone who helps another person in need, a tzaddik, it's considered that you actually have fulfilled and upheld the entire Torah. Okay, let's continue. Pasuk Ches, Behine Imcha, so sounds great. Now he's probably going to only say nice, warm, fuzzy things. No. Behine Imcha Shimi ben Gera. With you also is Shimi ben Gera. And we'll see, what does that mean, Imcha? There's a couple interpretations we'll see in a moment. But Shimi ben Gera, Ben Hayamini, Mibabchurim, he's from such a place. But who? Kilani, he cursed me. It wasn't just a not such a clear curse. Maybe he was, you know, speaking in a double language. It was difficult to, maybe he really didn't mean what he meant. Klola near Meses. It was a klola, it was a curse near Meses. Rashi says, Mefereshes. It was explicit. It was very obvious and clear that he was cursing me. B'yom lechti Machanoyim. On the day that I went to this place, Machanoyim. V'hu yorad likrasi hayardin, he went down to greet me at the Yardin, which doesn't necessarily mean in a nice way. V'shavala b'hashem limor. And we'll see exactly what did he say, what was his curse, but it was a shvua. I did swear to him, even though he was so disrespectful to me, and we'll see exactly what that is, what he did, to remind ourselves in Sefer Shmuel what he did. Im amischa b'charet, about killing him by the sword. I already swore to him, I made a shvua, that I will not harm him, I will not kill him by the sword. Okay, so I'm not able to really do anything. If you, since we're on page 20, if you just look, if he will die by the sword.
It doesn't say that he's not going to do it. He just says he's promised him, and we're in on this.
That means lo amitzvah. I will not.
If I will, as I swear that if I would do such a thing, like I won't do such a thing. So that he, I made a promise to him that I would not harm him. That was the shua I made, despite all the things that he did to me, all the things that he, the disrespect that he showed me. So if we just look, just for a moment, in the Radak, and then we'll see very quickly in the Sudas Davin. The Radak says, about five lines from the bottom, that, behold, he is with you. What does it mean, he's with you? Does that mean he's from the same tribe, the same Shevet? So the Radak says, no. Even though he is from a different tribe, he's from a rival tribe where Shaul is from Binyamin, Imcha, he's with you. What does it mean he's with you? Roshuscha, he's within your domain. And Behu Lahavihu Demisa, he also is within your control to bring him, to sentence him to death. Operush, Imcha B'Yerushalayim, it means he's with you, that he is in your Yerushalayim right now. This way you'll know exactly where he is, and hopefully you'll be able to put this guy to death. The Mesudas David says a little bit differently for us on the bottom. Baratz Leimer, Ohovcha, he's someone who is beloved. Hayoyishev Imcha, Betzmidus, who sits by you continuously. Rabbi Seinu Zal Amru, Shaimolamdu Torah, who's actually a teacher. He was a very wise, a very scholarly person. In fact, we saw way back that he was a member of the Great Sanhedrin. Yeah. So he was a very, very powerful person. But together with the power, again, makes, as we can see in the English on page 19, it's in the middle of the second to last paragraph, it says, he could not be trusted, and this posed a potentially serious danger to Shlomo. Shimi's status as Shlomo's teacher would make Shlomo all more vulnerable, so says the Abar Manel. And what exactly did he do? So Shimi ben Gera, I think it says it in English over here, I saw it somewhere, he acted in a very disrespectful way, that he was throwing stones and kicking and cursing David, and showing a tremendous lack of respect. And for that reason, even though he ended up coming back later on to side with David, the reality is that he's someone that cannot necessarily be trusted. And actually, if you look on page 20, you can see this in the English. Here David shows why Shimei is not trustworthy and why David could not have him. When David was in flight from Avshalom, Shimei had cursed him and pelted him with stones. But when the rebellion had been put down, Shimei rushed to greet David and pledge allegiance to him. The new loyalist made a public display of his repentance. David felt compelled to guarantee his safety, because after all, he did show his allegiance to him. Because of this oath, not only would David not go back on his word, but Shlomo too could not punish Shimei for his past treachery. So we're going to see exactly what he does advise.
What did Shimei do?
That's what it says over here. He cursed him and was throwing stones at him, and he was insulting the king.
On the way, when he was running from Avshalom.
Yeah, That's right. So because of that, he was showing a lack of respect to David, and exactly why he did that is questionable. But nonetheless, even though he's now on my side, who says he's really on my side? He's on my side because he has really... He doesn't want to get killed. He doesn't want to,
Actually, it says that he was Shlomo's teacher.
Right.
He actually had him.
So he's telling him to kill him?
Well, after this, he can't kill him. Can't kill this guy. But maybe similar to what we saw before, watch out for him. And that's what we're going to see now in Pusik Tess.
And if he does something again, right, then he can kill
him. Yeah, it will.
Can't kill him now?
He promised not to. So let's see this. Let's see Pusik Tess. Pusik Tess is going to make it a little more clear. Okay? Pasuk Tes, Viato, and now Al Tanakehu, do not cleanse him, do not make him as though he is guiltless, as is translated here. Ki ish chacham ata. You're a smart man, you're 12. You're wise. Vyodate sasher tasalo. You'll be able to figure out what you should do to this guy. Virata sivasi bedam sha'ol. And you should bring him down, bedam sha'ol, to the grave with blood. And Mesudas David explains, bedam sha'ol ratzel loymar, al tanichu lomos al mitaso, that Shimi ben Gera should not die on his bed. Ki im yishafech damo v'charev, his blood should pour out with a sharp sword. Now, he doesn't say exactly what this means, but some type of ruse he should create in order to give the impression that Shimi was disrespectful, or as it says in English, a first sign of insubordination, he'll be punished and not forgiven. We're going to see later on in this parak what will end up happening is that he's going that Shlomo is going to go to Shimi. He's going to tell him that you have to stay in your hometown. You can't leave. If you ever leave your hometown, you're going to die. And because something happened, he had no choice but to leave the town. Some of his animals ran away, as we'll see. And he found out that he left his hometown, he was killed. So because he didn't listen to him, that's why he was killed. Not because of anything in the past. So Shlomo was able to use and to listen to his father's advice, not to harm him, but rather to wait until he would do something which would show that he's not willing to listen to the Melech. Okay, Pasuk Yud. So that is, believe it or not, the last word that came out of David's mouth. That's it. So that's the last thing when we hear about David. Now what's even more amazing is when we think about David Melech, you would think that the next, we're going to have at least a whole parak discussing his burial and the mourning and everything. Listen to this. Vayishkav David im avoysav. So David lay down by his fathers, Yikavet, which he died, Yikavet b'ir David. And he was buried in the city of David. Let's just to see this next pasuk. Vayomem Hashem Malch David al Yisrael arboim shana. And David was the king for 40 years, because he became a king when he was 30. He died when he was 70. So he was a melech for 40 years. And then the pasuk breaks down how long was he a king in different places. B'chevron malach sheva shanim. When it came to Chevron, in which he was only the king over the tribe of Yehuda, that was for 7 years. V'Yerushalayim malach shleishim v'sholosh shanim. When it came to Yerushalayim, which he ruled over all the Jewish people, that was for the additional 33 years. But a total of 40. And then Shlomo Yoshev al Kisei David Aviv Batichon Malchusom Oid. It says that afterwards Shlomo became sat in his father's throne, and the Batichon Malchusom Oid, and the Malchus, the kingship, was, as it's translated here, is firmly established. That's it. Doesn't talk about anything about David's burial. Doesn't mention anything about his mourning. Nothing at all. It was unbelievable. There's no commentary that discusses it, except I saw in the Me'am Loes that said that perhaps people didn't mourn David's passing. The question is, why would they not mourn David's passing? This is what it says in the Me'am Loes. I don't have it in front of me. It's in English, the English Sefer. He basically says that because David was a king for 40 years, he lived such a complete and full life that it wasn't necessary for people to mourn his loss because of all of his accomplishments. That's what it says. It's brought down the Amloys. Of course, people mourned for Aaron HaKohen and for Moshe Rabbeinu. Exactly what does that mean? The other interpretation that the Amloys gives, which I like a little bit better, is that we see that David's son properly becomes the next king. So instead of the focus of tragedy, of focusing on David's passing, we just go immediately into the next king. And that's what David really would want, that his focus and the attention of the entire Jewish nation should not be on David, the loss of David, but focusing on starting anew with my son, the new king. That's brought down to Me'am Loes. But that's how it's brought down. There's nothing else.
I also think, right, wouldn't David have given a blessing to his son?
Right. This is unusual because, in fact,
if it's a religious man, it was right. Given some blessing and hopes for him and
right.
a guidance on how he should behave himself. But he did that before.
He did that, but yeah. You don't see bless. You don't see right. Bracha. Yeah. And these are different instructions, which, right. Again, maybe the way you have to frame it is, it's not just instructions, but it's a way to how to be an effective leader.
Yeah, but how to live your life as a Jewish person.
I mean, that he does touch upon the very, very beginning of the parak. He does talk about the importance of mitzvah observance and pasuk gimel, dalid. He talks about it. That's how he starts it off. But you're right. It doesn't really seem to give like this long bracha. And in fact, what's also interesting is that pasuk yudbeis is where the haftorah parshas Vayechi ends, which we'll be reading about again in a couple weeks. And when it comes to Yaakov, you see how Yaakov gives blessings to his children. He actually gives blessings to his children, at least some of them, exactly. Right? But we don't find that at all over here. It's very interesting the how you can compare and contrast this conversation with someone who's passing away, David, and that with Yaakov and his children. So it's fascinating, the study.
Where does the Medrash get the story that, yeah, you know, David, you know, was learning and he heard something, he was supposed to die.
Right, on Shabbos.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem to indicate that at all here.
There's no mention of anything
where,
here.
Where would the Medrash get something like that?
They get a lot of it from, like, a lot of times.
You'd want to have some source, something which you can fall back on in the actual text.
A word.
It looks here that David was sick. He was quite ill, and it wasn't surprising that he died. He was expected to die. I always used to think that he was very well, healthy, he was learning, and all of a sudden he heard this noise, or he went out, and that's when he died.
Right. I mean, we do know that part of the very beginning of Sefer Melachim begins, V'hamelech David Zaken Baba Yamim. So it says that he was old.
70.
And that's what we brought down, the quite because of the military, all the wars, and the stress of being a king. So he was older beyond his, before his time. But it is a valid question. It is a valid question as to why there's no real mention, no focus of David's passing here at all. And again, to me, the best answer that I saw is that the whole focus is, David's whole purpose was to ensure the continuity of Malchus based David and his son ultimately correctly is the next king. And that's the whole focus. The focus is not on David's passing. So, those are the psukim as far as that is concerned. If we can look in the English over here when it says 10, Vishkav Davidim Avoisav, so down in the middle, actually Rashi and others bring this down. What is Be'ir David? Where was he buried? In the city of David? So the Radak says, he Tzion. Okay. And if you look in the English over here, it says the same thing, Zion. The section of Jerusalem that he had originally captured and named after himself. That's why it's called Ir David, because he is the one that captured this area, and he named it the city of David. Okay? And then it says an important paragraph, quoting the Abarbanel. It was an honor for David that he was buried in the capital he had conquered for his nation. And this symbolized his elevated status as the founder of Israel's eternal dynasty. Shaul, on the other hand, was interred with his family, which symbolized that he had fallen from his royal status and belonged to his family rather than the nation. So that's the significance of where he was buried, to show that he was not connected so much to just the family, but it was a communal loss, and David was in fact the Melech, and all his children thereafter.
Would that be Hebron?
Kevin Ishai is in
Hebron. But he wasn't with his family.
No, but he said Shlomo was buried. Shaul.
His first king. The first king.
Shaul,
right.
No, I thought that's in the future. Do we know where he's buried?
Shaul was buried.
That's a good question.
Carson?
Shaul, do we know, his location
of
his burial?
Do you
know where he
was buried?
To where who?
Shaul.
Shaul was buried in Eretz
Yisrael. I don't think they really know where Dov is, even though they say they know where Dov is. I don't think they
know. In the vicinity, we know. The Pasuk says there's an Ir David. You know,
actually,
it's his idea.
They have his
kever
up in the...
Yeah, don't you go to that?
What is it?
But I don't know if that's really his kever.
I'm not
no,
sure.
They have lights around, candles, and all.
I'm not sure, but
I think the only ones they really know is always from Aphela and
Kevaron. Isha is buried in Kevaron. If we go to
Kevaron,
Isha.
Isha. Yeah. Yes. All right. So anyway, so that's that. So now Shlomo is the next Melech. He's the next king. And the last. Three words that we saw in Pasuk Yudbei is V'tichle Malchus Ma'od, that the Malchus, the kingship, was firmly established. So according to the words of the Mesudas David, he says a very interesting language. The fact is, his Malchus became firmly established. Who is that to exclude? Mesudas David says, Lo Ka'aviv, not like his father. As we know, Sha'ol Pa'amim Nirdach Be'ez Malchusa. At certain times when David was a king, he was on the run. So his level of being a melech was less than that of his son.
How was his malchus established? I mean, he was just a young kid.
No rebellions against his father.
Right. And I think that's part of everything that David was saying, was in order for V'tichon Malchus Ma'od to occur, in order for the kingship to be so firmly established, it's necessary for you to do all these things. Even though you are a man of peace, but sometimes peace can only come about when you remove certain issues. Exactly. And Rashi says, V'tichon Malchus Ma'od, I'm not exactly sure what this means, but I'm just going to translate the words, Af al ha'el yoinim. Also, on that which is above. And that really means like in the spiritual world, that he was able to bring balance to the world below and above, and probably ultimately because of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's just a couple more psukim, and then we'll stop. This is a segue to, so we'll see what we're going to be learning about next time. V'yavo Adoniyahu ben Chagis. He didn't think this guy was out of the picture. Adoniyahu had initially rebelled against his father. The questionable, did he rebel? He definitely felt that he was the rightful successor. So he went El Bas Sheva Aim Shlomo. He went to Bas Sheva, who happened to be the mother Shlomo, but we'll see. Deliberately he went to Bas Sheva to speak to the king. V'toymer Hashalom Bo'echa, V'yomer Shalom. Bas Sheva asked, why are you here? Are you going to kill me or something? Are you here in peace? You ever show him? She said, I'm in peace. As it says in the English on page 21, knowing that Daniel hated her because she had been involved in blocking his way to the throne, Bathsheba was taken aback at his unexpected visit. So she was anticipating maybe he wants to kill her. And therefore Bathsheba asked Adoniyahu, why are you here? She said, I'm here in peace. Everything's fine. But you are doubly alive, but Tamer Daber. So he said, I have something I want to talk to you about. So she said, go, what do you want to say? Daber. The Yomer Adyadat, you know. Ki li hoysa maluch. You know that I was the one that should really be the king. V'lai somu kol Yisrael p'nehem l'mloich. If you go to all the Jewish people, if you would have a vote, every one of them would say that I should have been the king. It was me, right? V'titzav ha-melucha. Something happened. The melucha, like Sebivon, turned around. Something happened strange. Some mistake happened in South Florida with the voting. V'atehi l'achi. And it was given over to my brother. Ki me'ashem ha-yisaloi. Why? Because I guess Hashem wanted it. But forget about God for a second. Other than God, it seems like I should have been the king. Doesn't seem right that I was forsaken. And therefore, because the truth is I should be the king, and I'm not going to ask for the Malchus. I don't want to be the king. But at least give me something. as it says in English, as a consolation prize. Now, she'ela achas anoichi shami itach. I have one small little question, one request from you. Al tashivi es ponai, please don't turn me away. But tell me, like, Damir should speak already. Okay, well, what do you want? V'yamri said, Imrina, please speak on my behalf with Shloimo Hamelach. Not to my brother, but to Shloimo, he's the king. Kilo yoshev es ponayach, that he shouldn't turn his face away. So what do you want already? One simple thing. V'yitin le'es avishag hashunamis le'isha. There's a beautiful woman that I want to get married to, and her name is Avishag Hashunamis. That's it. V'tomer basheva tov. So basheva said, that's very good. Anochi adabi le'ech alecha el hamelach. I will go and speak to the king on your behalf. So not such a very big deal. What he was trying to do is just wants to get married. I mean, what's the problem over here? So we're not going to see any more psukim, but at least conclude with the words of the Masudas Dabur, which is Pasuk Tes Vav. Did he really just want to get married? No. Says the Masudas Dabur Kili, Al Ki She'el Sonar in the first wide line, Ha'i B'damer Avishag. With regard to his request, it was specifically about marrying Avishag. Who was this woman, Avishag Hashunamis?
She was the one that wanted David.
She was the one that, right. The
Ed's.
She wanted. Right, that's
what
Bathsheba came into the room.
She was the. When he was cold. Yes. Not his wife, as we established, because David already had the maximum amount of wives. The Etzim Kavanasa, but his real intention, Haisa, to continue to show some dominance and positions of power, and to eventually say, I'm the king. He wanted to make this preparation. How would that accomplish anything? By taking a person who was with the king. We know that when it comes to anything which belongs to the king's scepter, the king's throne, you can't just sell it on eBay. No one can just use the scepter. Only the king. So the fact also is, it applies to Avishag and Shunamis. If he goes about and marries Avishag, people are going to say, ah, you see? He really is supposed to be the king. This was a whole big mistake. And therefore, by marrying Avishag, he's going to end up overthrowing Shlomo, and then Shlomo will no longer be the king, and instead Adoniyahu, who feels he should be right with the king, will be the next king. Of course, we are going to see that Shlomo, who is very wise, realizes this whole plan. Ultimately, he has his brother killed. Stop here.